This is the UCLA Mindful Monday Meditation. Each week, Marvin G. Belzer, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, leads a 30-minute guided session offering a variety of themes and practices to cultivate self-awareness, emotion regulation, and increased well-being. Thanks for joining us.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Monday meditation. Good to be here with you. If you're new to meditation, I hope to give clear guidance. The basics of mindfulness meditation are relatively simple in my view. And if you're here for whatever your reason, it is something that you can actually do and don't need to wait till later. A couple of things happened recently that got me thinking about the simplicity of what we do. First, I have one of my nephews has a daughter who turned 5. And so I guess she's my great niece and she is pretty great. Can 5-year-olds meditate? I have no doubt about that. They definitely can. I'm not the one to teach them, even though I do value clarity and simplicity. I'm not experienced enough with kind of that age to know how best to communicate. And probably it has to be pretty individualized. But the other thing is, on Saturday, I did an hour workshop with early childhood educators who are in a program through UCLA. And again, I was teaching them the same way I teach here on Mondays. I wasn't teaching them how to actually transfer this information to children, but the topic did come up and it's a very interesting one. So I'm not the one to do it, but I have no doubt that approached in the right way, children can do these things, and probably it's increasingly important given all the distractions, all the pull on our attention, that children be taught these things. Anyway, what we'll do, I'll invite you to focus your attention. We'll focus on sounds, on sensations in our bodies. The reason we spend time doing this is there's something about this mental activity that works to create conditions for more clarity, stability, tranquility, and so forth. It's quite amazing that it works. It's a very individual process, right? And so for each of us, it's a very personal activity, which is obvious. And so there is not like an algorithm for how it happens, but there's a tremendous amount of evidence that anyone who's interested can find for oneself why we would spend time doing this. So I seem to be in the mood to lecture or just free associate. It's because of my great niece. We'll meditate within 30 seconds. We'll start, I promise. So we're going to focus our attention. I'll give you guidance if you're new to this. It really is doable. And we'll find that we can indeed keep our attention relatively stable for some time. And then equally, we'll find at some points that our attention has just been pulled away and maybe time has gone by where we're daydreaming, planning, worrying, and so forth. Perfectly normal and expectable. In mindfulness practice, when we notice the attention has drifted in that way, we include whatever is happening. And just recognize thinking, planning, worrying, whatever it is. With emotions, we can get in the habit of remembering to tune into the feel of the emotion in our bodies, the component of the emotion, very often overlooked because we're focused on thoughts. So if we're anxious about something, then quite reasonably, our mind goes to that something, like what we're anxious about. And sometimes we have to solve a problem relatively quickly and so forth. In meditation, we're giving ourselves a break from those sort of obligations to solve problems quickly or at all. And so we just recognize the thoughts, we recognize the emotion, we tune in to feel in our torso. There are sensations connected with anxiety, a component of anxiety, and then we bring our attention back. Okay, that was more than 30 seconds. I definitely am in the mood to chit chat. Let's meditate together. Eyes can be open or closed. Might take a few deeper breaths as we begin, slightly deeper in breath and out breath. Maybe even a sigh with the out breath. And letting your breath be normal. We'll come back to the normal breath in a minute. For now, just notice the sounds you can hear. So, in the midst of everything that may be on your mind, notice that you can decide to focus your attention on this part of your experience. It's very interesting that we have this capacity. And in doing this, we're not trying to hear everything or keep track. It's much simpler, just moment after moment, tuning in to some of the sounds that are noticeable. So focus on sounds in this way, just being receptive is a fine way to meditate. It's also good to practice with our bodies. So when you wish, shifting your focus to what you can observe within your body, the actual sensations, the head, shoulders, arms, hands, torso, legs, feet. Sensations might be quite vivid, they might be vague. Just noticing what's real, what's really happening, vibration, pressure, and so forth. So again, not trying to get something out of the sensations. It's much easier than that, would be just the noticing, just focusing, noticing, sustaining the attention. So we tune into our bodies, it can be natural to notice sensations connected with the normal breath. So not breathing deeply, the way we began, just letting the breath be normal. There tend to be some sensations that are noticeable. The abdomen, slight rising, tensing with the in-breath, falling, softening, dissolving with the out-breath. Flow of fine sensations at the opening of the nose as air comes in, as air leaves. So the sensations connected with the normal breath tend to be pretty good much of the time for our purposes. Can let the attention rest, so to speak, in some place, like the belly, the chest, at the nose. Just knowing when the in-breath begins, knowing these sensations as they come and go. If for any reason the breath doesn't feel quite right, we can come back to sounds, focus elsewhere in our bodies, sensations in the hands or the feet. So we can use our own intuition here. We need to use our own intuition, even as we practice, as we learn this method. But do try to avoid the temptation to try to get it perfect. So good enough is fine. So it takes effort for sure. We have to try, we have to decide to try, but it's not a lot of effort, and it's mostly this kind of sustained patience, a willingness to stay with it, and including staying with it in those moments when we realize that our attention has drifted, and even recognizing time has gone by. It's quite interesting. No matter how much we try, this will happen. Sometimes it'll happen because we're trying more than we need to. In any case, when we realize we've been drawn into thoughts, it's quite irrational, and often just recognize, okay, these are thoughts, whether they make sense or not. We don't have to squelch the thoughts, but we can practice not simply being carried along that stream, one thought leading to the next. So we stay alert in that way. So recognizing thinking, maybe emotion, tuning into the body, and then coming back to the breath or wherever we've been focusing before. So I'll be silent for a bit. We can practice together. So we'll take a few more minutes for the meditation together. We do not need to be tense about doing something perfectly. And yet over time we learn. And one thing we learn is how much effort to make. So in these last couple minutes, we just have an eye on, should I ratchet up the effort a little? Should I lessen the effort a little bit during these minutes? So thank you. It's good to practice with you. During those last minutes when I mentioned ratcheting up the effort or lessening it, like one way to think about that is like ratcheting up the effort would be endeavoring to make a little bit more precise connection with the beginning of the in-breath. Right? So you kind of just that intention, okay. Right. When does it begin exactly? Right. Whereas loosening the effort, it means staying with it. But sometimes we are trying too hard and just kind of knowing, yeah, this is an in-breath, this is an out-breath is enough. And again, not to get uptight about doing something exactly perfectly, but you know, this is one of the things that we can learn for ourselves. That there are times where we can ratchet up the effort one way or another just to kind of take advantage of the time that we're spending. And there will be times, perhaps when the mind is restless, where we can recognize that, okay, I'm actually trying harder than I need to here. And this then turns out to be a very interesting sort of issue over time. And there are, you know, kind of give rising to even different kind of big approach, different approaches to meditation in the big picture, actually. And of course, back to the theme of children, it's like, you know, the real art of sharing this with kids would be kind of knowing the kids enough to recognize how much effort to encourage or not, right? And Deborah, I see you have taught third graders. Would you Phil, would you be willing to say a little bit about what your experience has been?
Sure. The children loved it. We would do it every like a, it was regularly after recess, 1 or 2 days a week. They would come in, they would find a space on the floor, they would lay down, and just what you and Diana have taught for years, we would talk about getting in touch with our breath. And they're squirmy, they're 8 and 9 years old, but they loved it and they would look forward to it. And yeah, they really enjoyed it, and it was easy for them. It was easy for them. There'd be squirmy days, but a lot of days they just really enjoyed being there doing that, and knew what time it was. Like, aren't we doing meditation today? Things like
Okay.
that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Thanks for sharing that. And within your first words, you segued, you may not have realized it, but you had them lie down, right? Yes. Now we're talking about the appropriate amount of effort, right? And for some of us, it will be an appropriate posture as well. There is an organization, there are people certainly working on these things. One I know of, I put in the chat, Whole School Mindfulness. I've worked with them some. And it truly is an interesting issue. If one aspect of the problem or the question is how to approach it in schools, one way or another, where you have 20, 30 kids all together. Another, of course, for those of you who are parents or uncles or aunts, is how to approach it with the children that you live with or are around. Again, I'm not coming here with a lot of knowledge or experience, but my intuition is don't first of all, don't hide from your children what you're doing when you meditate. You may think that for you may have reasons to hide from your children. I don't know. If they see you meditating, if they even kind of are just in the room where you're listening to a podcast, I definitely think that's not a bad approach, where you're not like telling them, let's sit down and meditate. Just kind of make it available in their environment and see what they can might pick up, and you may not ever know what they pick up. And in any case, I'll start talking about this as if I know what to do, but I do not know what to do. And I think as a college professor, most of my career working with undergrads, including a meditation course, it's so different because with a course for credit, they may come the first day and decide whether or not they want to take the course. And if they do take the course, then they volunteered to do it. And where I have almost no experience is working kind of with a group of people who aren't showing up voluntarily, so whether it's in a school or in your own home, how to navigate that is truly interesting, because there's certainly information to be shared, to be taught and learned. And the art here would be conveying that, allowing that information to come through, even while kind of respecting, in a way, how little we know about what's going on for them, even if it's your own child, right? You're a son or a daughter or a family member. In a way, it's like what's going on for them at this level of. Here's an example from my own life to illustrate that point, at least to me. When I was in the sixth grade, there was going to be a section on science. And the teacher said, okay, let's listen to the lights. So just talking about observation, this scientist observed the world. So the example was listen to the lights. And of course, it was those sort of electric lights that buzz. But little Marv Belzer sitting there had no idea what he was talking about. And it's interesting. Like over the years, I've wondered what was going on for me, right? In a way, it's like I remember the story so clearly that there was some level of awareness, that's for sure. By the way, what do you think? The chat is open. I have my own theory. about what was going on for me. But I would be interested in like what you know me, some of you know me, some of you don't. What was going on for little Marv Belzer back in the 60s when he couldn't make sense of the instruction, listen to the lights. Okay, you need some motivation. During the pandemic, I started giving out cupcakes. I will send cupcakes to it was a pandemic, so it was unprofessional, but it was a pandemic. But it is a bad habit. If anyone can actually identify my best interpretation of what was happening, I will send you some cupcakes, but you'll have to private message me your address. Oh, we have a cupcake winner in the chat. I wanted to get it right. Lights are usually seen, not heard. That's plausible that I just couldn't make sense of it. But nonetheless, the exercise was sustained. It was just, I'm pretty sure that issue was addressed, but I still couldn't make sense of it. Wanted to get it right. Yeah. Words too literally. Been there. No, nobody's got cupcakes yet. Big opportunity. I'm not saying I know this is what was happening. Maybe we're gonna have to put a time limit on here. Lights don't talk. No, you're right. But, I don't, th my best interpretation is that no one is ever gonna know, but my best interpretation is that, it was something other than not understanding the instruction. Okay, well, we can't just sit here waiting. Your ideas are good. Your ideas are good. I might have been thinking too much in a way, but I have another hypothesis which does illustrate how kind of the important it is to recognize that with children, things can be going on that we just need to be kind of beginning of my it prob it was part of my meditation journey because obviously I remember the story. I remember it. I'm pretty confident this did happen. Thought the teacher was wrong. Well, some of my most memorable experiences as a student was when I knew the teacher was wrong. I just specialized in those. There are several of those moments, but that's a different story. The lights really do buzz at, time. No, you guys aren't going to get it. I'm sorry. It's terrible to have a cupcake contest that no one wins. My best conjecture, you were waiting for the message. My best conjecture is that I already had some tinnitus at that time. And that it's just like listening to the lights. Well, listening to anything that was somewhat subtle, it wouldn't have stood out given the tinnitus. And after it's been a year, I thought about it off and on. I think my tinnitus was made worse by punk rock, but I don't think it was actually created by punk rock. And it's not that big a deal. No one's winning cupcakes today. Now that it's started this habit again, I wasted a lot of time in the pandemic trying to figure out how to get cupcakes delivered. But anyway, you see the point, right? It's like that for the teacher, it was like this was a great idea to like note to kind of give a lesson on how we observe things. And I genuinely was confused. Some of your ideas might be right. Joe has an interesting comment there. But I'm pretty sure for me, it just wasn't the way to communicate with me about how to observe, right? Just because of the tinnitus. Well, we did a meditation today. Thank you for your attention. Obviously, there is so much to explore relative to how to share mindfulness with young people, respecting the idiosyncrasies of their minds, and their level of development, right? I have had the good fortune of working with older teens quite a lot, high school and college, and have also had the luck to know people working with children at all ages. And the final story I'll share is I used to say things like, in my great wisdom, there may be ages, levels of development where we really can't share mindfulness, so don't worry about that. For instance, I think seventh grade, and in the very audience in which I was sharing this wisdom, there was a guy who afterwards told me, "You know what, dude, I've been sharing mindfulness with my seventh graders for 8 years, so." And it is there the whole school mindfulness, the link I put in, is very much aware of the importance of figuring out how to bring this into education in a way that is as important and appreciated as other subjects, given the demands on human attention, given the tech that we have. Thank you. We'll see you. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Monday Meditation. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.